for a taste of the classics with a twist. Join me, Marguerite, with Classical Chaos, Sunday mornings starting at 9, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, Canada.
Oh my, become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
The Baker and the Chef, Bangon T-Shirts, Cherry Bomb, House of Vintage, Beat Street Records, Dunleavy Snack Bar, The Fall Tattooing, Fortune Sound Club, Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Perch, The Portside Pub, Save on Meats, Vinyl Records, and Zoo Shop.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus, or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
Hello, today is Friday, the 28th of March. I am Alistair Melling.
And I'm Rachel Bergen. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. The time is currently 5:05 p.m. and time for a full hour of independent campus and local and international news, as well as some news from around... Okay. Yeah? Can we move on? And so today's top stories and segments. Segment one will be, is this a live interview of a recent student-run campaign concerning the misconceptions around homelessness.
As well as segment two, Morme Zanke's report on the recent findings on inflation theory.
Okay. So today also features in segment three, an episode of UBC's Get Wrecked podcast featuring Storm the Wall, Triathlon and more.
Later in the program, segment four, Nina and Josh report on the possible SkyTrain worker strike. And Alistair Melling of Grievances of a Scot hosts a roundtable discussion on the sponsorship of sports events such as Storm the Wall. And now, some headlines for today.
Okay, in campus news, we have Storm the Wall. Storm the Wall was wrapped up yesterday with a reported 736 teams competing. The race featured swimming, sprinting, bicycling, cycling, okay, running, and the final climbing of the 12-foot-high wall with at least 5 people in a team. This year's event saw at least 3,600 participants, and congratulations to you, all of you who raced.
In local news, local radio station Z95.3 will return to the air. Due to the recent sale of the FM frequency by Bell Media, 95.3 FM will no longer be Virgin Radio as the brand remains in Bell's possession. Instead, NewCap Radio, the new owners of the frequency, will return to the local Z95.3 brand, last seen 7 years ago. Virgin Radio has been rumored to be moving to QMFM's current 103.5 frequency, though that is as of now unconfirmed. NewCap Radio also expressed their optimism about the success of the returning station, pointing to the bumper stickers that can still be seen on vehicles around the city, despite Z95.3 having been off the air since 2007, including my vehicle.
Nicely advertised. And in international news, Quebec's 41st the first general election continues its trend of drama. The Parti Québécois, I believe I'm saying that right. No, it's not. Of course it's not. I'm English / Scottish. Continuing. Has accused Anglophone students and other non-French speaking groups of registering in abnormally high numbers, as Quebec's Justice Minister Bertrand put it, "We do not want this election stolen by people from Ontario and the rest of Canada." On a related note, there have been reports that a student voter suppression has also been occurring under the pretense of unclear Quebecois residency laws. Anglophone students that have voted from Quebec in the past are allegedly now being prevented from putting their names on the provincial voters list. The following is a recording posted by SoundCloud user Anon McGill. And we're just waiting.
Ontarian students that have not been able to prove without question that they, and there is a legal interpretation in the notion of being resident. It is not because you live here that you qualify in terms of residency. And that's where their doubt is.
The Elections Act says that...
I am not a lawyer. They are not lawyers. Their decision is final.
I understand, but it's very clear. Like, if anyone could... It says very clearly that if you can't determine the other residence, or if I'm homeless, then my residence is where I reside, which is here.
Okay. The upcoming general election in Quebec is scheduled for April 7th, 2014. In other news, Danielle D'Entremont, a fourth-year Queen's University student, was punched repeatedly in the face outside her home on Wednesday night. The attack took place the day before a controversial men's rights awareness talk that she openly opposed. The talk on feminism, called "What's Equality Got to Do with It? Men's Issues and Feminism Double Standards," took place as planned the day after. The victim says she received several threatening emails prior to her attack, and although she didn't recognize her attacker, he knew her name. Kingston, Ontario police are still attempting to identify the attacker. In related news, an opposition group attempted to de-ratify the same Men's Rights Awareness Club, claiming it perpetuates rape culture, and the motion failed.
Okay. For your international news, G7 countries cancel a summer G8 summit in Russia. The nation members of the G8 have declared that they will meet without Russia at the G7 summit in Brussels. This comes in response to pressures from Prime Minister Harper and others to expel Russia from the G8, urging their European colleagues to take a tougher stand against Moscow in response to its recent military actions in Crimea. The decision was reached by consensus at a meeting of the seven leaders, convened by US President Barack Obama, on the sidelines of the two-day nuclear security summit in The Hague. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov remains seemingly unaffected by the decision, saying, quote, "If our Western partners believe that the format has exhausted itself, we do not cling to this format. We do not believe it will be a big problem if the G8 doesn't convene." The summit was originally scheduled to meet this June.
Egyptian army chief resigns as defense minister and will run for president. Abdel Fattah el-Sisi has announced that he will be resigning as the country's current defense minister in order to pursue the presidency. El-Sisi's popularity has soared since the military deposition of the former president Mohamed Morsi. This surge in popularity with the Egyptian public has largely been attributed to his hard stance against the Muslim Brotherhood, the group that supported Morsi's unpopular presidency. However, Sisi has recently received criticism from the international community for his harsh sentencing of 529 Muslim Brotherhood members to death for their involvement in violent clashes with the Egyptian military last year. Egypt is expected to hold a presidential election by July 17th of this year.
Okay, those are your UBC campus, local and national headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned.
Alone? Call SafeWalk, a free service where a co-ed team will take you anywhere you need to go on campus. Don't walk alone. For a walk, add SafeWalk to your phone. Call 604-822-5355. That's 604-822-5355. Alternatively, use a UBC Blue phone and ask for SafeWalk. Approach any SafeWalk team or drop by our office on the main floor of the sub across from the gallery lounge.
Because you're mine, I walk the line.
Oh my. Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts on Commercial Drive and in other areas at
Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, People's Co-op Bookstore, Audiopile Records, Bad Bird Media, BAM Merch Canada, and the Vancouver Music Gallery.
Wow, it sure does pay to be a friend of CITR. To find out more, visit us in room 233 of the sub on the UBC campus or go online to www.citr.ca.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure.
Welcome back to News 101. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thanks for being with us.
Okay, up next we have Rohit Joseph, who's hosting a live interview with Daru Ravi, who is a UBC student in the Sauder School of Business who became inspired to tackle misconceptions that plagued the perception of homeless people in Vancouver. The idea first came to Daru after he had a conversation with a stranger on the bus. The gentleman's story threw him off guard as the man had a full-time job yet was still forced to live in a shelter. When it came time for Daru to do an assignment for one of his commerce courses, he had decided he wanted to do a project that could outlive the course and could have a continuous impact. He got together with a group of four other students who shared the same passion for the project, and they started to work on a social media campaign which intends to raise awareness around the perception of homeless people. The website contains Daru's interviews with people living in the in shelters, and it centers around their background, their day-to-day routine, and their perspective on what can be improved or changed in order to help them get back on their feet. Rohit, welcome to News 101.
Hello. All right. Awesome. So Daru is a good friend of mine. And just to give you some context, I had found out about this through him in a phone call after he came back from the interviews. So Daru, tell us, how was it that first day you went into the shelters to do the interviews? How are you feeling and what did you learn?
When I first went in, I had to talk to the shelter administrators, and I had to come off in an unadversarial point of view. I had to come in the perspective of helping the homeless individuals, because you tell the shelter administrators you're a commerce student doing a homelessness campaign, and they they don't really believe you because
why would that be?
since when do commerce students do any good? So I had to come up from a perspective of I'm trying to help these individuals. I'm trying to gain awareness because the perspectives towards individuals who are out of luck, who face some very tough situations and who are homeless is largely negative in Vancouver, especially with the affluent crowd in downtown and the location of the downtown east side being so close to Cole Harbour and places like that. When I went to the shelters, I had to come from a point of helping these individuals. And from there, the shelter administrators really opened up and let us talk to anyone that I needed to talk to gain insights and stories.
And on the website that you've set up, it's basically in an interview format. So why did you choose to portray the stories this way?
Well, first, we were thinking of doing a first-person narrative, something which I thought would be great at the beginning. But at a later stage in sort of the brainstorming, we sort of figured out that we didn't want to sugarcoat things. We didn't want to sensationalize it.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted their sort of direct response to what the questions were. And this would give an unbiased view of what they're actually thinking.
Yeah.
Right. And because people love reading stories, people love being sort of moved in the moment, and then when the movie ends, sort of walk out of the theater, right? But the interview format let us really put the truth out there in the rawest form possible.
Yeah, unfiltered, right?
Unfiltered, yeah.
And was there a particular story that impacted you, a particular person who's life story just touched you in a way that you found was more powerful?
Yeah, I almost cried, and actually I did cry after talking to this guy. He was, we'll call him Rex, because I don't want to say his real name, but we call him Rex, and Rex was, is a refugee from Madagascar. He's around 19 years old, and his mother and sister are living in a women's only shelter, and his sister is 16 years old, and they came here because they wanted to find a better life here.
Yeah.
And being refugees, they don't have permanent residencies. So here's this 19-year-old kid who's in a men's homeless shelter with individuals who are either addicts or have very tough lives. But here he is just moving from another country. And
split up from his family.
Too. Yeah. And it was so tough trying to hear... I mean, trying to have any hope for him because the situation is so tough, right? But he was still sitting there saying, you know, God has a plan for me. You know, I'll make it through and I'll do whatever I can to make sure my sister gets to achieve the career that she wants so that my mother doesn't have to work anymore. And I'll work as hard as I can to do that. And I was completely shocked because you grow up in a society, especially in Canada, where we're spoon-fed everything, right? And to come to these realizations by going through these circumstances, it's unimaginable for me, at least.
Wow. Now, keeping this story in mind, and I noticed there was a question that was particularly, very good question, because you had actually asked the homeless people in these shelters what they thought could be done, what they thought could be changed in order for them to help them get back on their feet and, you know, recover from their positions. So what were some of the, just a sample of responses, like was there any patterns you noticed?
One of the largest patterns was that they were unaware of all the help that was available.
Oh, so they weren't even aware of their resources.
Yeah. Especially with psychological resources like counseling and therapy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these individuals depended either on themselves or people in the shelter for emotional support, which is not necessarily the best thing because the individuals in the shelter are going through sort of the same circumstances, and you don't want to depend on or seek advice from somebody who's in a similar situation. Just as vulnerable as you, and it brings up a lot of negative memories. So yeah, so it's that was one of the bigger trends, was that, you know, the psychological help and just the help in general they were unaware of.
All right. And I think to finish off, what would you say people learn from from visiting your website, which, by the way, you should probably mention.
Yeah, the website is vanhomelesscampaign.weebly.com. It's yeah, and it'll be on the CITR Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
And
what's like the biggest lesson that you want people to take from reading these stories?
The biggest lesson I would love people to take from this is that, you know, the next time you're walking by somebody, look at them and don't judge, you know, because everyone wears their own chains and everyone has their own problems. And it's easy to look at somebody's clothes or look at somebody's makeup for that day or look at somebody's shoes or something very superficial and judge their entire life based on this. So next time you walk by somebody, don't judge and maybe take some time out of your life to just find out who they actually are.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, Daru.
Thank you.
And everybody, just remember that you can find this on the website again. It's, what is it?
Vanhomelesscampaign.weebly.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rohi. We're going to be taking a quick PSA break, but stay tuned to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM.
Attention class, settle down. My name is Chris Connolly from the band Hot Panda, also known as your professor. Let's get one thing straight. If there's some of you that think this class is going to be a walk of the cake or a flop about in the park, you are sadly mistaken. Half of you will drop out. And the other half of you will wish that you were dead. If I could offer any advice to those of you still hell-bent on attempting to pass my class, it would simply be to keep your radio tuned to CITR 101.9 when you're in the play.
This is Sasha Bilot, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. It's like having a clown in your head.
Welcome back to News 101. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
Our next feature segment is segment two, Morimei Zanki's report on the recent findings on inflation theory. Get ready.
I really want to talk about the discovery of gravitational waves in our universe. Some of you may have heard of this discovery. There was a press release held by Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics last Monday on March 17th, and they said that a group of astronomers in the South Pole led by John M. Kovac saw these gravitational waves through the BICEP 2 telescope. Now, BICEP stands for Background Imaging of Cosmic Extragalactic Polarization. For all of you people wondering what that acronym even means. So they had this image of this polarized radiation that kind of looks like a zigzag distortion. I like to think of it like there was a bunch of small metallic rods lined up in a set specific pattern, and then a giant magnet just sort of flew across the pattern, creating a distortion of weird angles. And a lot of people in the scientific community like to say it's a spiral-like configuration. So that's just sort of like an image of what they saw. So this was really exciting for the scientific community, and I think a lot of people kind of going about their day-to-day lives weren't really sure what the big deal was, why people were talking about this. You know, things that happen in the universe are so detached from the world right now. We sometimes struggle with with thinking about these things that are kind of beyond our immediate environment. So right now, I'm going to try to explain why these gravitational waves are important and why it's something that was such an unbelievable breakthrough in the scientific world. So before I explain exactly why the gravitational waves are important, we kind of need to go back 14 billion years to when the Big Bang happened. So I think everyone sort of has a little bit of a conception of the Big Bang, even if it's through a popular American sitcom. But the Big Bang happened exactly 13.8 billion years ago, and to sort of a nutshell definition, the Big Bang was the beginning of our universe, and it started in a small, dense, extremely hot state, and then it expanded and cooled down, and this cooling down let particles form into these complicated entities that we now see in our observable universe, like stars, galaxies, planets, moons, Earth. Everything you can think of happened because of this cooling down of the universe 13.8 billion years ago. So that's the Big Bang. Now, where these gravitational waves come in, this detection of these ripples, that comes in with the theory of inflation. Now, inflation is the theory that right after the Big Bang, right after that moment of inception, a trillionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second, there was a huge, rapid surge of expansion, where everything in our universe was caused to be uniform. The theory of inflation was very popular because it explains a lot of anomalies in the universe. For example, why is the universe an even temperature? It's only been 14 billion years old. There was not enough time for this temperature to be evened out across the universe by itself. And so inflation explains, through this rapid surge of expansion, why the temperature is even and how that's possible. So moving back to gravitational waves, where does that tie in? Why is Mormay talking about all these random things? Just get to the point already. So gravitational waves are evidence of inflation. So when the universe was wrenched apart like that in inflation, gravitational waves were produced, and we can see the evidence of inflation through this polarized radiation that was picked up by the BICEP 2 telescope by these really talented astronomers from the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. So that's why this discovery is so exciting, because we have perceivable evidence of our origins of being. So this gets me personally really excited about life. I think oftentimes, just sort of going about my day-to-day life, I forget that there's, you know, other stuff out there, other things that can kind of validate our existence. Like, this simple discovery, kind of just put out there right now in, like, this last 3 minutes of me talking. Obviously, this is a simplistic version, but just this idea that we can have evidence of how our cosmic past was revealed, that brief moment of our universe's birth, I think is really fulfilling. And I just wanted to share that with you. And hopefully through this discovery, scientists can gain more information about where we came from, how science can explain who we are. I think that that's something really fantastic. And I hope you gained as much insight as I have hearing about this discovery. So thanks for listening and have a great night.
Thank you, Mormay, for that piece. Our next segment is an episode of UBC's Get Wrecked podcast, including Storm the Wall. This evening, so we will not be broadcasting the entire piece. However, you can find it on our Facebook page.
Hello, everyone. My name's Josie.
I'm Yvonne, and we're the hosts of this episode of Get Wrecked, the UBC Rec podcast.
For this segment of Get Wrecked, we'll be conducting more interviews with the student body as well as a few updates on the intramural leagues of rec.
That sounds great. Let's get started.
As you already know, it's March Madness, and we're starting off hot. The rec showcase was last Monday, March the 3rd, and we're definitely on our way to a great month.
Hey Josie, could you tell me a bit more about the Rec Showcase?
Well, the Rec Showcase just had its inaugural unveiling. It was an evening event at the Norm Theater with various performers who had the opportunity to show off their moves. We had dancers from UBC Tap, UBC Dance Crew, and it looks as though we also had a bit of a hula show going on.
Wow, that sounds great. I can't wait for next year's show. So what do we have in store for this show?
Recently, Rec partnered with UBC Right to Play to host a flag football tournament. With more on the event, here's John interviewing Julie Rosenfeld.
Thank you, Yvonne and Josie. That's right, I'm here with Julie from UBC Rec to talk about the Right to Play Tailgater. First off, Julie, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for UBC Rec?
Sure. I work with the Public Relations Department of UBC Rec. It's my second year in Rec. Last year, I had a good time working for the Ice Hockey League. I've been working on a number of projects this year with groups across campus, but my big one at the start of this semester was the Right to Play Tailgater football tournament. So I started working with Right to Play to get them to make a lace-up team for Lace Up for Kids that happened in November, which raises money for BC Children's Hospital. So I met the execs during that time, and they mentioned to me that they were looking to run a big event this semester to raise funds for Right to Play, which is a charity organization that raises money to give kids access to sport in less developed countries, in less developed neighborhoods. So it's a really great organization, and it fits really well with the whole Rec ethos and the Live Active idea and everything we do. So I started planning this tournament with myself, the director of football, Eric Ed, at UBC Rec, and the Right to Play execs.
So was this a normal tournament, just like anything else that UBC Rec throws on, or is it a little bit different because it's a different community event?
I would say it's very similar. UBC Rec actually used to run a tailgater football tournament a few years ago, and the structure was almost exactly the same. We used a lot of their material, but what was different was how it was kind of marketed to the rest of campus. So UBC Rec didn't do a lot of that. It was Right to Play in charge of kind of getting teams in and getting the word out around campus, and I think they have somewhat of a different audience. So the really nice thing about the event was we had people from all across campus that you don't always see in rec leagues and rec events. So we had a team from the UBC out. We had a team from the Ski and Board Club on a weekend during winter, which was even more impressive because you'd think they'd all be skiing. We had a team from rec, a team from forestry. It was really great, and it really showed how diverse the campus community is.
And can you explain for those at home how UBC Rec got involved and what we did since Right to Play did all of the marketing?
We organized the logistics. So something that UBC Rec really trains their volunteer staff for, like myself, is event planning, tournament running, you know, everything like rosters, registration, equipment. So everything we kind of had access to, we kind of exploited. So me and some of the football crew, we went out and gathered all of the equipment that they use for a regular Sunday night football league and put it all in the truck and brought it over to the fields on the morning of. We used our database to do registration and add team rosters so that we could have game sheets. We ran the day of operations like advancements and playoffs and stuff like that. And then Right to Play got the teams and marketed the event, and they also did awards and prizing. So they had Right to Play t-shirts that the winning team got, and they had a couple things from sponsors. So it was a collaborative effort.
That's awesome. Another good collaboration with UBC Rec. And who won the tournament?
It was the Average Jodies, which is a campus-wide team. They play in the Sunday Night Football League.
Okay, so you did have recreational teams coming to play as well.
We did, yeah.
And like any rec sport, was there a fee to pay?
I don't remember what the exact cost was, but I know the tournament raised about $600 for right to play, which was primarily through the registration.
And since this event was run entirely by volunteers, how would one go about getting involved?
If you wanted to get involved with UBC Rec, our assistant director applications are opening on March 3rd. So that's for all leagues, all events crews, and all of the marketing crews in UBC Rec. And then right to play, I believe you can look up through the AMS website and email them your interest in getting involved in their club. Hopefully this tournament will run next year too, because it's a really great relationship for us to have on campus.
Well, thank you, Julie, for the update on the UBC Tailgater Football Tournament. Back to you, Josie and Yvonne.
Great work. I can't wait to see more partnerships in the near future. Since you brought up the topic of March Madness earlier, I can't help but share all the events that Rec has to offer. For this month, we have Tri-Do, Thunderbirdie Golf, and to top it all off, we have Storm the Wall!
Man, that's a lot going on and so many ways to get active. Up next, we have Olivia and Alex ranting about all their favorite things about triathlons.
Hey, Alex, have you ever, like, ran and swam and biked consecutively for a significantly long amount of time?
Are you talking about a triathlon?
Heck yeah.
Don't get me started on a triathlon.
Please start, baby.
First off, there's all the chafing.
Oh, God.
I mean, talk about rubbing my legs together.
Ouch.
First you're in the pool, then you're on a bike, and then you're running. Those babies are just going to be rubbing against each other for literally more than an hour. And what else, Olivia?
I think also shaving is a big issue, because really, as a boy and a swimmer, you should probably shave. And hey, as a girl, if you're like me, you should also probably shave, because I haven't in quite a while. What else, Alex?
How do I run my triathlon and keep my flirt on at the same time? I mean, I want to be in a streamline in my bike, but how do I wave to the person next to me and flash a cute wink? Or how, when I'm running, do I start suggesting how great they look today when I need to be breathing constantly? In the pool, I mean, well, in the pool it works out, because they can just check me out and then that's flirting, so that's fine.
But what if you've eaten too many carbs the night before? Then what do you do? What if you've eaten too few carbs the night before? Then what do you do? Oh my gosh, what do you do? Yeah, and you know what else? I was thinking that you'll probably be hot for some times and cold for some others. It might be nice getting into the pool, but how nice is it going to be getting out of the pool?
When you get out of that pool and there is rain or hail and you're trying to make it to cyclotrans, but your feet are so cold and maybe they're starting to cramp because you've been keeping them pointed while you did all your kicking, and maybe you're just going to bail and faceplant on the concrete. What are you going to do? I'll tell you what you're going to do. Don't you dare talk. Don't you dare try and cut me off. Hey, what about my bike? I mean, I have a triathlon bike, but it's for someone who's 5'10 and I'm 6'2. So that doesn't work, because then my knees are in my face while I'm trying to cycle.
And another thing, what about those gel packs? You know those squish gel packs that people sometimes take? They can taste really disgusting. This one time I had one that tasted like banana, and it just set me off for the whole day. It was horrible and sweet and disgusting. And where do you put them? Do you put them in your swimsuit and look like you have an extra nipple? That seems kind of weird. I think what we're trying to say is that we're jealous.
Man, those two crack me up sometimes.
Yeah, that really didn't make me ever want to do a triathlon, but I hope some of you will disagree.
Hey Josie, are you planning on participating in Thunderbirdie Golf?
You know, I haven't really thought about it, but now that you ask, I might just do it. I mean, the Canucks are trading away Luongo and everything, so I might as well start the offseason now.
Man, I really don't know a lot about hockey, but I'm glad you're thinking about golfing. Sign up soon, yo! Registration deadline is on March 17th, and the event is on the 21st. To all you golfers out there, think about participating in the event. It will be at the University Golf Course, so you don't have to go too far.
Man, I'm already feeling the energy from all these events. There's so much going on that I have barely time to keep up with the NHL.
I don't really follow hockey, but I really want to know more. What's going on?
Well, the trade deadline just passed, and I think there was more happening this year than the last three deadlines combined. Goalies were being tossed around like dodgeballs in a rec league.
Man, that sounds really exciting. I think I'm personally more of a football fan, but it's not really popular here, so yeah. I guess that's what you get when you grow up in the States. So what's next on our agenda?
Last in our session, we have our lovely Alex with another Leaks update.
Hi, Alex Starr with your Rec Radio sports segment. Football, Ultimate, and various other weekend leagues have been on an extended break for reading weekends and family day. In the Dodgeball League, GeoRock's Hulks of the Men's 2 Division are undefeated after 8 games and have a point differential of 172 points for and only 20 points against. In Female Tier 1, Dodge It Like It's Hot is averaging 21.5 points a game. In the Men's Elite Basketball Division, Shoot the Poop is 6-0 with only 2 games remaining and have already secured first spot for the playoffs. A couple shoutouts for team names this week: Cougar Bait in futsal, Hold My Disc in ultimate, Amoxicillin and Doxycillin in the volleyball league, both of which are pharmacy teams. Good pharmacy puns. Also in the volleyball league, I particularly enjoy the name To Kill a Blocking Nerd. In a varsity sports update, your women's Thunderbirds volleyball recently secured their conference title. The women's swim team medley, freestyle, and back crawled their way to a third consecutive national title. Coming up, the varsity Thunderbird baseball team has a home series with games on March 5th, 7th, 8th, 9th, and 12th. Locations.
Okay, welcome back, and we're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for some more News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wrap up the segment of Get Rekt. We'd like to leave you with more information on the last...
101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Rachel Bergen.
And I'm Alistair Melling. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver or online at citr.ca. Thank you for being with us.
For our next segment of the show, we have a brief on the SkyTrain Workers Union Strike mandate produced by Josh and Nina.
SkyTrain workers voted in favor of a strike mandate on Monday, which could silence that familiar SkyTrain chime. 95% of workers represented by the Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 7000, or QP7000, expressed support for the mandate. Contract negotiations between the union and the British Columbia Rapid Transit Company recently fell through after 8 months of negotiations. Major issues on the bargaining table include sick plan and retirement benefits. QP7000 represents 537 active SkyTrain workers who have been without a contract since last August. A strike would most likely force the shutdown of the Expo and Millennium lines, affecting hundreds of thousands of people who depend on the SkyTrain for their weekday commute. There will be no strike taking place before the QP meets with their employers next week for mediation. If a contract is not agreed on upon mediation, the union local will still have to give the BC Labor Relations Board 72 hours notice. The SkyTrain's Canada line, however, will remain unaffected, as its employees are represented by the BC Government and Service Employees Union. Annalise Hunt is the chief job steward at QP Local 7000. I reached her by phone to talk about the strike mandate. Miss Annalise Hunt, from what I understand, QP 7000 and BC Rapid Transit Company have met some 25-30 times, but negotiations failed to produce a contract. Can you pinpoint why the negotiations broke down?
Well, we reached an impasse last month. The main reasons was the employer was refusing to remove two very large concession items. Other than that, we were quite close to reaching a deal, we believe.
And these concessions items were the sick plan and retirement benefits, right?
That's right. It was a change to the sick plan that would actually, some contract language changes that would encourage or pressure employees to come back to work sick, and enforce a regulation to obtain doctor's notes way too often compared to other plans that are out there. And the retirement benefits is a two-tiering option the employer wants to implement, which and two-tiering eventually leads to everyone having substandard benefits.
And why choose striking as opposed to other means of pressure?
Well, we certainly haven't chosen striking. Let me be clear. A strike vote does not mean that we're actually going to strike. A strike vote, it's sort of a misnomer, but what it is it's a mandate to the employer from the membership to show that the members are willing to take job action. And job action could be a whole series of things, but the way the Labor Relations Board rules are such, you have to actually have a strike vote and the mandate from the membership in order to do anything, such as an overtime ban or a leafleting campaign or wearing buttons or working to rule, all those things that could affect the public opinion or the employer's opinion well before we would ever go actually withdraw our services. That's the last possible resort, because our members are very, very aware that if we went out on strike, the SkyTrain would stop running, and we wouldn't be hurting the 1%. It's not the 1% that take the SkyTrain. Mm-hmm. We'd be hurting other working people, and I can assure you that would be the last thing we want to do. So I want to be, you know, very clear that a strike vote does not indicate that we are willing to or we will be going out on strike. It means that we'll be attempting all forms of job action before, and a strike would be the last resort.
So I understand that QP7000 also had a strike mandate in 2006 and 2011 that was implemented, and both times, from what I understand, did not result in a strike.
Is there
a trend here, though, between in negotiations that this keeps occurring?
Yeah, you're right on. The trend is the employer doesn't want to finish off the bargaining process with the union. They are the ones that apply for mediation. Each of those times, they applied for mediation. And at the mediation, when the mediator came down with recommendations, both parties agreed to those recommendations. And we're of the position that we could do this without the added expense and utilization of the Labor Relations Board. We believe that collective bargaining works, and we should be back at the table. But unfortunately, the employer has to be told what to do by the government, and that's unfortunate. We take strike votes because it's part of the process in order to go in front of the Labor Relations Board and say, if you don't get a deal, if you don't work out something between the parties, then the union will be in a position to strike immediately following booking out of mediation. And so that's the process. It's a very procedural thing. We have mediation dates Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I'm very, very optimistic that we're going to come out of there with a deal. The employer will likely have to back down on their concession items in order to get that deal, though.
That's great to hear. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks very much, Joshua.
Bye-bye. Once again, that was Ms. Annalise Hunt speaking on behalf of QP7000. A representative from the British Columbia Rapid Transport Company declined to comment, stating only that it is their, quote, intention to continue to work towards a settlement with QP7000.
Thank you to Josh and Nina for that. For our final segment, we'd like to welcome Alistair Melling into the studio to discuss the sponsorship of sports events such as Storm the Wall. Alistair, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Well, so I wanted to discuss the sponsorship of sports in general. Now, what encouraged me to do this was specifically, obviously, the event that we had recently, which is Storm the Wall. Now, I don't know if many listeners saw the sponsors, but they included Coca-Cola, Domino's Pizza, and McDonald's. Now, some say that bad publicity is good publicity in some way, so we are going to be dissing these people, so I don't want to make it seem like, well, I'm mentioning their names, but please don't go into these places. No, I can't. I don't know if I can say that. But, however, the thing that I really want to add to this is for people just to question, why do we have these? What is it that, why do we allow these companies, these major corporations to come in and sponsor our events? Now, I did send a message to REC asking them to comment on this, and if they did, because I couldn't find actually a statement by REC saying that this event, Storm the Wall, promotes fitness or team building or anything that would have directly contradicted, obviously, what Coca-Cola, Domino's, and McDonald's do themselves. So there's been no direct statement by them contradicting that. So I can't say that them having that has a direct having that up is a direct contradiction. However, it does seem, just on face value, an event that is, it would appear to promote your own fitness, that you do have these corporations. Now, I do also want to tie this into the Olympic events, because these are the biggest places where they, where these kind of companies fund, events that these organizations fund. Now, I believe in London 2012, the funding went to $1 billion in total, although it's very difficult to gauge. They also had the largest McDonald's in the world within within the East End. Sochi, on the other hand, I think has topped all estimates, and they have gone to $1.5 billion, although it's obviously very difficult to gauge because they have the direct in-cash sponsorship, and then they have various merchandise that they buy. So if you saw them, they were all waving for the Sochi Olympics. They all had flags that had Coca-Cola and the Olympic sign saying Sochi 2014 on it. So those are the kind of things that they're also paying for. So it's kind of difficult to judge. So I wanted to bring into the discussion, is this partially our fault for allowing these companies to sponsor them? And also because obviously they need the money to come from somewhere to fund these events. So I wanted to ask what your opinions specifically were upon this issue of, well, you can comment on Storm the Wall or the Olympics. Does anyone want to come in?
Yeah, it's Morgan. Hi, I've been in studio the whole time. like you said, you need the money to come from somewhere, but I do think that it's problematic having big corporations with some sort of moral stuff going on, mm-hmm. Having them sponsor that, because that does, in a way, promote what they're doing. Like CITR, for example, we do a lot of not-for-profit advertising, student advertising, but we do avoid any sort of corporate advertising, and we take into consideration who we do end up sponsoring, because I do think it reflects on your programming or your events.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, and obviously McDonald's and Domino's and Coca-Cola are probably like the number one contributors to like obesity in Canada and the United States, mm-hmm. and with REC, they're promoting activity and fitness, and it seems a little counterintuitive to be taking money from companies that's not their main goal. Mm-hmm. Yet they do sponsor some of the athletes for, you know, like you were saying, for the Olympics, and it's mm-hmm. ridiculous.
With specific reference to the Olympics, I don't know if we could have actually known it much in advance. I didn't know who was sponsoring the event in advance before taking part in this, but I do think the people who take part in it and who, for example, who watch the Olympics, is what I'm specifically referencing, I think there was something along the lines of 100, 200 million people views per day. I can't remember, I don't know the exact figures, but it was a huge amount of people who clearly fund. I do have this thing here. It's 23.7 million people watched primetime coverage of the 2014 Sochi Olympics. There we go. And so it is kind of our fault at the same time, or not our fault, but the people who are watching, and because they pour in massive amounts of money, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, for the Sochi Olympics it was Samsung, Panasonic, Omega, Visa, and a number of other ones like mining companies as well. They put their sponsorship on because they know there are going to be a lot of people watching. Mm-hmm. So maybe it could be our responsibility as citizens of the world to sort of boycott these events, because I didn't watch the Sochi Olympics. I deliberately knew I didn't want to watch the Sochi Olympics because of the various reasons for the sponsorship. I think I dislike the sort of herd mentality of everyone's going to go to a pub and watch. Who they're not involved with the actual people. There's very little. I don't support my country at all. I don't know why I'm told you must support Great Britain, Team GB, and everything that they do. And I get very annoyed at being told that's what I need to do. So
you would boycott REC events that take sponsors like Coca-Cola and McDonald's?
Now, it's very difficult for me to say this because I'm only here for a year. I'm exchange student. If I were to do it again, I would look in advance as to see who was sponsoring it. And maybe instead of, because this is a very, very small event, I would definitely message them in advance and question their... And maybe if I were here for another year, I would question them, specific people, asking them who are going to be the sponsors this year. And if there is any way, if they're short on... Obviously, if they're short on funding, then they do kind of have to go to some of these companies. But if we could find other ways of raising money for next year.
And I just think, too, that there are other local businesses who would be more than happy to contribute to campus life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say that it's... I don't want to sound too harsh, but it is a little bit lazy to rely on the same corporate sponsors year after year.
True.
When I think it's probably feasible to sustain, an event like Storm the Wall
mm-hmm.
from smaller local businesses who have a vested interest in the campus and not for a monetary mm-hmm. value, but also just because they're part of the community.
Mm-hmm. I did send that in my email asking for them to say would it have been possible to have found any other forms of funding that could have avoided these corporations that obviously go very much against what the event seems to be promoting. I say seem to be because obviously they didn't actually release a statement.
And we are going to have to wrap up. Rachel, did you have any last comments?
No, that's good.
Okay.
That's good. Well, okay, next, just quick advice for all of you next year. Unfortunately, I'm not going to be here. Please question this. Go out, ask the rec members if they can, or even contribute to the sponsoring. So that is our program for today. I am Alistair Melling. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved, or give us an important news tip, contact us through our email news@citr.ca. You could subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews and segments on the website citr.ca/news. For more independent news, join us next Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I've been Alistair Melling.
And I'm Rachel Bergen. Today's show was produced by Nina. From the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening.